time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, January 14th. Good to have you here with us. We're back into the swing of things this year, and it is, seems like this is going to be one of those years that's going to fly by so quickly. And there's so much going on in the industry. See, we got Seth Sprague back from Phoenix Capital. There were so many questions that started pouring in after we did the last time he was on. He was on December 17th. And it was titled Strategies to Maintain Profitability in 2019. Obviously, there was a lot there, and the questions, we couldn't get to all of them. So he's back again today, and we're going to cover some of the questions that did not get answered on the 17th, December 17th. We're going to get back into that. But I think we could also say this about what's going on in D.C. The last person leaving any administrative office in Washington, D.C., please, and related to the mortgage industry, please shut off the lights. Michael Bright resigned last week. It came as like, are you kidding? Who's left there running the show? And then we got the shutdown. So it is just, what do you say? So the Federal Registry is shut down. We're lacking some leadership back there in the mortgage department. You say related to the mortgage industry. We're going to get Seth's comments and all of that. But it's good to have you, our listener, here. The mortgage industry is going to continue. We're going to be surviving and doing well. We'll get past this as we get past so many other things. But we're glad to have you as our listener and dialed in again this week. I heard from Matt Orlando, who has been with Lenders One for a long, long time. He called me, wrote me early this morning saying that he's listening to the podcast, how much he enjoys it. I heard over the week, through the weekend, a number of messages came in from LinkedIn connections I have saying how much they enjoy this. One of the things, as Alan is hopefully going to dial in there, he'll be with us, but his segment is getting a lot of attention. It was really fun to see how he is, that people are saying how much they enjoy the tech segment. So thanks to all of you that write me and let me know. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're honored to have you as our listener. You know, we win some awards here and there, now and then. It's not about that, but our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Commuting, working out, getting ready, waking up. I'm not sure. Is this a good wake-up program? Well, there's some energy here, so maybe so. Anyway, let's see. Any news coming up? We're talking the MBA's news. I'm sure we're going to hear about that in just a minute. Is the upcoming MBA conference, the Independent Mortgage Bankers Association conference in D.C. Trying to figure out if we're going to make it out there. Hopefully I will. But anyway, excited about today's topic with Seth Sprague, so be sure to stay tuned all the way through. And if you're interested in anyone in your executive team is thinking about getting into servicing, send them the link to the podcast right now so they can listen in or listen to it afterwards. We'll see what's going to happen. There are changes, and he's going to give us insights of how you can profit in this ever-changing market, especially when there's no one at the top in D.C. Hopefully that'll change. Anyway, special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Love our partnership with them. Black Knight, thrilled to have them as a sponsor. They are the leading provider of integrated software and data analytics solutions. Open Mortgage, the leading buyer of reverse mortgage loans and home of some of the top LOs of the country, top earning LOs, because of the reverse mortgage. I was talking to Scott Gordon of Open Mortgage earlier. We're going to have him get him scheduled on. He's got a new software product. It's out there, and we're going to have him come on and talk about it. It could revolutionize how you're doing reverse mortgages, folks. So a lot going on there at Open Mortgage. Looking forward to getting the science of sales in just a minute. Also, we have the two co-ops, and everyone is coming to Austin, Texas this year. Lenders One will be here with their winter conference. And then about 2-3 weeks later, we got the Mortgage Collaborative will be here with, well, no, it's first of all, it's the Mortgage Collaborative, then it's Lenders One. We're excited to have everyone coming to town. It's always fun to have our conferences here in our home state. So the winter conferences are for both of these entities are going to be the Lenders One and Mortgage Collaborative. We'll be here in Austin, Texas this year. go to their websites, Lenders One, and also go to the Mortgage Collaborative website. I encourage you to attend one of these conferences. Come on out to the Winter Conference here in Austin. Great city to visit. It's our hometown for Andy, I, and Joe, and we'd love to see you. Also want to say a special shout-out to Velma, an efficient mortgage marketing and email platform. Helps get the word out. They've got all these templates built. You know, add your message and send it. It's a great product. Let's see, the Knowledge Cube. I forgot to talk about those guys. We're using them more and more of our clients are using them. They're very pleased with the training tools they have. All right, finally, I want to say a special thank you to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Joe. Now, let's get over to Rob Van Raphorst and get the MBA Mortgage Minute. Thank you, Rob. What you got for us?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, Ginnie Mae announced that acting president Michael Bright will be stepping down from the role on January 16th. Bright will be replaced by Maren Casper, who has served as executive vice president at Ginnie Mae since mid-2017. MBA will be working closely with Casper, as well as the rest of Ginnie Mae's senior leadership, to continue important collaboration on issues such as counterparty risk management and abusive refinancing practices in the VA lending market. Also last week, the House passed four individual appropriations bills, including H.R. 267, which allocates spending for the Departments of Treasury and Housing and Urban Development. MBA sent a letter detailing our industry's priorities within H.R. 267. Notably, this included the need for additional funding for the modernization of FHA's antiquated information technology infrastructure. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me on MBA's Mortgage Minute.
Appreciate the Mortgage Banking Association, all they do for our industry, and our partnership with them here on the podcast. Great group of people. You got to get out to these conferences this year. We've got the Servicing Conference. We got the Mortgage Tech Conference coming up in March. We've got the Independent Mortgage Banking Conference in San Francisco at the end of this month. I hope to see you guys out there. I want to talk briefly about the digital business card. So I'm sitting here this weekend, and I'm getting notifications. So-and-so just shared your card with another person. Now, can you get that kind of viral information? Or when your card's going viral, your information's going viral, do you get any of that information? Do you know when you hand a paper card out if anybody ever refers you anywhere? If you have this digital business card, folks, you can know who is handing your card out and to whom. It's a wonderful tool. Not only that, you can get your message out. You can have it go so many different directions. When you sign up for this card, now it's $20 a month. That sounds like a lot of money. Well, after you start bringing people into it, it's a network marketing kind of thing. It's not multi-level marketing, but allows you to make income off of it. So I haven't paid for this card almost within 2 months. So put $40 investment in it. Now it's actually making me money. And I am finding out who's referring me around. It's a powerful tool. I encourage you to check it out. So, like, you know, if Seth Sprague, he's on mute right now, had this card, and everyone, he referred it out, he'd know everyone who's getting servicing valuations. They're getting referred around a lot of that. So, anyway, check out the digital business card, folks. You'll know who's talking about you and sending your information around. You don't get that from any other business card. Check it out. It's at our website, Lick It On Lending. Go in the upper right-hand corner. You'll see it. You can look into it. We're happy to help you get it all set up. Let's hear from Les Parker and TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the market. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by LoanLogic. This thing called Dove. Bucks can't handle it. This thing called Jobs. Stocks must get round to it. They ain't ready. Crazy little thing called Dove. When investors focus on the positive U.S. growth, the U.S. Treasury bond yields rise. When the gaggle gander at the gloomy global economic graphs, yields decline. When Powell panders to the previous Fed chairman's vision of protecting asset bubbles, the investors see a dove and sour on dollar investments. For now, investments here, the Fed say, take a back seat, rate hikes. Crazy little thing called Dove. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Oh, yeah. Check it out. tmspotlight.com to subscribe to Les's email. we're getting a lot of feedback on this segment. A lot of people, some people start writing saying, hey, I don't understand it. Now they start listening to it and they're going, I'm getting it. And they're and it's connected to the message. It's always amazing when you, like Knowledge Cube says, when you connect an emotion to a message, you remember it. That's what this works so effectively at. It brings a music message, a familiar theme connected to something as complicated as where the rate's going, then you have a little bit better retention of it. So what's really interesting about this, I interviewed late last week. There was so much information about the direction of interest rates. And he's going to dive in. We used a lot of his music parodies, went into it and explained his segment a bit more. And I'm really looking forward to sharing that next week. That's a must listen to. Another must listen to is Joe Farr, because last talks about the macro view, but Joe Farr brings us up on what is happening here and now. Joe, good to have you here, friend.
Well, there's a lot of crazy little things. One happened today. MBS prices are unchanged on the day so far, and stocks are down just a little bit. But stocks opened lower and bonds opened higher. And about 9:30 Eastern time, the president made a comment that he just said that the trade deal with China was likely. Didn't provide any details, really. Didn't provide the timing, and the market liked it. You know, all it took was to say that, I guess. Stock market rallied, and bond prices fell back to unchanged. So, and right now, I think the stock market's down about 60. It was down a couple hundred, I think, early in the day. So, Dave, last week was really a relatively quiet week for stocks.
Quiet week, yeah.
Yeah, mortgage rates improved a little bit. The Dow did rise over about 500 points, but there weren't the same large intraday and day-to-day swings in the stocks. It was just sort of a slow, steady improvement in the Dow, and it didn't have much impact on mortgage rates. The economic data that came out didn't cause a lot of reaction. The ISM services fell a little more than expected, and job openings in the JOLTS report fell a little bit as well. The inflation data that came out, core CPI came out and matched expectations and matched the prior month as well as on a year-over-year basis. The Fed talk that came out during the week did have more of an effect. The minutes of the December 19th.
On the 19th, yeah.
Yeah, indicated that the Fed may have been a little more dovish than people knew from the statement and press conference. There were several members that had suggested no rate hike in December was the appropriate course, and as we know, the Fed didn't take that course, but it was interesting to see the minutes reflect a little more dovish attitude. And then on Thursday, Fed Chair Powell's speech had a bigger effect on the market. He reiterated the patience the Fed has for further rate increases, but he said that the balance sheet will still need to shrink substantially. Substantially, I think, was the word that caused the market, especially in the bond market, to react a little negatively. Looking at the week ahead, cause several things aren't going to come out. Retail sales, usually one of the biggest economic events of the of the month, set to come out on Wednesday, but it's not due to the shutdown. And neither will housing starts come out, again, because of the shutdown. The Bureau of Labor Statistics is going to be open, so they're going to release PPI tomorrow. The National Association of Home Builders will release their housing market index.
Yep.
It's expected to show that the builders are feeling a little better this month, and lower interest rates could not have hurt that feeling. Industrial production and consumer sentiments will come out on Friday. But, Dave, the biggest event is going to be, I think, is going to be the vote in the House of Commons on Theresa May's plan for Great Britain leaving the EU.
Yep, I think it's going to be a
no vote is considered likely, all right, and that's going to require more negotiations. A big defeat could put Theresa May's job in jeopardy, which is going to add a whole lot more to the uncertainty and the timing of things as Brexit, when it will happen. I mean, will it happen with an agreement or not? That uncertainty weighs on the market, especially on the stock market, risk assets, and that, you know, if it happens and it creates that uncertainty, it could have an impact on U.S. markets and could possibly be good for mortgage rates. The vote's scheduled to occur tomorrow between 7 and 9 local time, so that's between 2 and 4 Eastern time. You know, could be a good time to be paying attention to what's going on in the markets.
Yeah, we could expect some volatility with that. Well, there's just so many things. so many outliers.
There is. It's
just like, what the heck? And then not having any economic data, or at least some of the significant economic data. Well, we'll see. It's interesting times in D.C. these days. Who is more stubborn and willing to hold out? I'll tell you, I don't know what to say. But thanks, Joe. Appreciate you bringing on this great information. You do a great job on this each and every week, and very grateful to have you since the beginning. And as long as we're doing this, you'll have spot here. So good. Appreciate your perspective on it. Let's run it over to Open Mortgage before we hear from, Alice can't be joining us, but we do want to hear from Scott Gordon. Talk about the science of sales.
What's your story? We live in the information age. Anything you wish to know is just a Google search away. Information, however, is not knowledge and does not lead to understanding. Stories are what lead us to understanding and make sense of a chaotic world. To many of our customers and partners, the mortgage process is chaos. Agents, FSBOs, titles, closing, credit scores, debt-to-income ratios, appraisals, and inspections. Ever have a confused customer barrage you with questions? Answer a question only to have another and another thrown your way? Your customer is looking at the pieces, not the whole picture. This is your opportunity to tell a story. Storytelling increases information retention and understanding up to 70%, as opposed to a 5 to 10% retention from facts and information not woven together into the form of a story. In the coming messages, I'll be giving you the essential elements you need in order to craft the best stories for your customers and for you. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
Good job, Scott. Like that. The science of sales. Go check out all of the information at openmortgage.com. They've got a great website. Looking forward to Scott coming on and talking about this new technology. He has a one-of-a-kind technology to help regular LOs that have mortgage loan originators that have never originated a reverse mortgage, showing them how they can do it through this latest technology. Good job. Love this stuff. Alan Pollack, good to have you here, friend. Matt Orlando specifically said how much he enjoys your tech updates, and 2-3 others over the weekend said the same thing. They enjoy the whole podcast, and they're really finding your segments very interesting. So what do you got for
very
us today?
We need to seriously consider heading out to CES next year. There was a lot of cool stuff. You know, there's an artificial intelligence toothbrush that will now track the ways that you brush your teeth and provide you
Are you
tips.
Serious?
Yeah. It was in fine print. But, you know, there was a year of home automation and a lot of AI. And I don't have to tell you about all the cool stuff. You're probably seeing it all online. But I will tell you that LG's president in a keynote speech said a pretty interesting comment. He said, this technology, AI, and what we have in front of us today is an opportunity of our lifetime to open the next chapter in human progress. And if you apply that to our industry, it's just completely true, right? We're finding new ways to do either business the same as we used to, or to completely get into new areas of communication and adoption of what we do today, as well as engagement, behavioral science, right? So pretty interesting comment.
Yep.
So Dave, a couple things, you know, kind of coming off the tail of last week, talking about reorganizing what you're working on, setting 2019 into a really good strategy. I found a couple things in the news that I thought were important, and then a nice, pretty interesting one at the very end. So first, Maxwell, which is a point of sale platform in our industry, they released their new disclosure platform. They put this together with DocuTech. It's a smart move. Ultimately, they're looking to remove the friction that the borrowers have today, and they've been looking for the unique angle. They also released, if you remember, maybe about 10 podcasts ago, we talked about how they released Apply ID, which is a way to aggregate data on the early side. What's interesting, I think, about that is because everybody, when you talk about the point of sale side of the industry, focusing on how to do more in that engagement. And disclosures have been a pretty difficult component of that. And in addition, I also saw in the news that Strathmore had released their 2018 survey. It's called their Technology Insight Study. And what they found is that lenders are focusing on being able to provide borrowers with the ability to sign disclosures online. 61% of lenders were working on that in 2017 compared to 72% now that are looking for that. So that's just the wave of way things are going. It's, you know, not only can we take an application online, but let's engage stronger with the borrower. The second thing that I wanted to get into today is there's a mortgage startup called HomeFi. and they launched a new platform with no commissioned loan officers. And I think what's interesting about it is they're using technology, right, to empower. So I don't think a borrower will know that, hey, I'm going to go work with a lender that doesn't, you know, provide commission to their loan officers. But I think what's more important is that they're leveraging technology to create a platform where you don't need to be as skilled in their minds only in order to originate some portion of that loan. Another thing that I saw in the news that was kind of interesting is Informative Research. And I know that, you know, we've talked about them in the past. They have a brand new offering. It's called Credit Expert Wayfinder. And what it does is it automatically identifies a plan of action that a borrower can use to increase their credit score. And it joins their existing products. Not new, right, in the industry. We've seen things like this. But when they're in front of a borrower who's ready to make a transaction and it's a captured audience, meaning that Informative Research is your partner as a lender, and now you're putting this in front of somebody who's engaged with you, I think it's a really important piece of technology, something to make the loan officer more skilled, but also in order to help that client engagement. And then one other thing I saw, I thought was kind of interesting, is Guild Mortgage announced a partnership with a company called Homebot. And what they have is a personalized dashboard.
I was wondering who those guys are.
What they do is they enable a lender to give homeowner insights, information about their finances related to the home. So as an originator, think about having more information to be more empowered. You have a more financially...
Is that like what a mortgage coach does?
Yeah, mortgage coach is focused on how to provide a borrower with information to make an important decision about a financial transaction, the different ways based on, you know, what your goals are. It's actually very interesting what Dave Savage and Joe have put together there. But no, this one's a little different. It provides you a little bit more information financially about the overall picture of where you stand today rather than what necessarily your goals are. The other item, David, is a marketing platform called MonitorBase. And they have a soft pull service which allows a mortgage company and their clients to access instant credit prequals right through a soft credit pull on the mobile device. So what they do is they look at behavioral data, and they will alert you based on these different actions that are occurring. One, to let you know that a client of yours is doing something, they may be ready for a new transaction. Or two, is the borrower, your customer for life, could be engaged with them beyond the transaction and find out, are they pre-qualified before they start? So it helps provide a closer link to information they're looking for, right? Affordability. And that leads me to, you know, very important topic, which is where we are today. You know, many times in the past I've talked about, you know, we've gone from this world where you can go online and get rates to now you've got to engage with a point of sale, and you've got to go down this process now before you get that affordability. I think that link in the middle is missing. So it's going to be interesting as we look over the next couple of months to figure out, you know, of the lenders that are offering these different solutions, how many of them are going to focus on what the customer really needs up front, which is likely affordability information, versus fill out a form, give me all your information, and now I'll tell you what you can afford, right? So, and that takes me into, you know, life, the customer experience, the life of loan. And I don't know if everybody heard, but TMS actually sold their retail mortgage lending operation to AmeriSave. And they did that because... Yeah, they have a new platform.
TMS, the money
SIME.
Store, not us. TMS,
right.
The consulting firm. Yeah, yep, the money store. Yeah,
and they've got a very unique servicing platform. So what they're going to do is they're going to focus just on that servicing platform and other fintech offerings they have. They actually have a couple patents pending, and they're going to be focusing a lot on the customer experience of servicing, as well as blockchain and artificial intelligence. So I thought that'd be interesting to start off the second week, the second podcast of the year here. Lots of great stuff going on. And if you're looking to understand to brushing your teeth correctly, you can check out CES. I think it was Oral-B.
That's not surprising. Yeah, I can't wait to get that one. Artificial intelligence in my mouth. I'm not sure that that could have all kinds of implications. You didn't brush your molar enough. Wonder if, it's crazy where this is all going, Alan. I appreciate it. Matt's right. Matt Roll, our good buddy Matt, who used to be at Lenders One, just joining Informative Research, I might add, got it right. Matt Orlando, thanks for the comments about you, Alan's segment. Appreciate it very much. Yeah. So you got fans out there, Alan. How about that?
All right. Good stuff. Look at that. I signed T-shirts on Tuesdays, by the way.
You signed T-shirts on Tuesdays. Well, I appreciate you being here on Mondays because you're busy signing T-shirts on Tuesday. Folks, it's good to have you,
that's
Alan.
It.
Let's take a quick break and run over to Knowledge Coop, another piece of technology that is so good to help you in your educational process. We're starting to use it more and more as a consulting firm, and I'm thrilled to have the partnership with them, and I want you to consider a partnership with them as well. So with that, let's run over to Nathan of Knowledge Coop.
At the Knowledge Coop, we work hard to create training that engages and encourages our audience. Once people are engaged in training, they are more likely to stay focused and retain the information that they need to know. So here's your training tip for the week. Next time you have an important policy or bit of knowledge you need to train, do it in short clips and make sure you sprinkle it in with a little bit of humor. Video training is highly impactful, but only when done in the way we've been conditioned through TV. Videos should be no more than 5 minutes, should get to the point, and humor should be sprinkled through to emphasize the important points. Memories are more powerful when attached to an emotion. If you need help with your company's training, please reach out to us at knowledgecoop.com, and we'd be happy to assist. And that's your training minute from the Knowledge Coop, which strives for easy and fun training for the mortgage industry powered by a smart digital platform.
And it is a smart digital platform, a good one. I love it. Love using it. Thanks, Nathan. Appreciate that update. You know, I've meant to say earlier when Alice, when we skipped over Alice's normal segment, that you should be checking out Mortgage Media, everyone. It's a new website that's out there. They're doing a lot of stuff. David Stevens is publishing, and Jim Parrott are publishing like crazy there. They interviewed me. That interview's up there. I encourage you to check this out. This is an up-and-coming news source. Kind of the two places I go is Mortgage Media. I mean, Source Media is always there. They're kind of the king in so many regards, do a great job reporting. So I'm not minimizing any of the ones that are out there. Our good buddy Paul Mollo I'm speaking of. But Housing Wire, I love those guys. I love what Jacob does with his interviews. He did an interview with Casey Crawford this last week. And they have up-to-date information, great stuff in there. So be checking out some of these resources, housingwire.com, and then also mortgagemedia.com. Stevens has got a new article up there about the former FHA commissioner, reform before recapitalization. Very interesting. And it was really interesting. It got a lot of hate mail. A lot of hate came on that one. And it's sad. David's a great guy, and I really value the relationship we have with him while he's at the MBA. I'm so honored and blessed that it's continuing. So check out S.A. Abrams and Eric Souza are the ones that are behind the founders of Mortgage Media. David Stevens and Jim Parrott are now getting in it. We're getting involved in it. So very exciting platform. Check this stuff out. And my good buddy Phil Treadwell's podcast can be featured on there, as will ours here in the not-too-distant future. Andy Schell, good to have you with us. The Profit Doctor is in the house. And you got your lab coat on, and you got your clipboard and your stethoscope, you know, listening to the heartbeat of what the companies. What do you have for us today, Profit Doctor?
I took my doctoral comprehensive exam this past weekend, 6 hours straight of just typing and brain dump. But I'm done. I'm passed. I'm on to wrap up the dissertation. So I was excited about that.
Wow. Well, when is that going to all happen? What's the official?
Probably 13 months, maybe 14
wow.
months. Depends.
Admire you
Depends
doing
on some
that,
of the research design. Pardon me?
Yeah. I admire you doing that.
I thought you said, why are you doing that? And I thought, well, because I'm nuts.
No.
I'm crazy.
Right.
I'm stupid. I'm insane.
Well, that's a legitimate question. Everyone knows you're really smart. Do you have to go get smarter on it? So what do you got for our listeners today about for the Profit Doctor segment?
Well, so today we're talking about servicing, and so retaining servicing, releasing servicing, subservicers, all that kind of stuff. So it's a little bit back to basics. Again, we're at the beginning of the year. It's kind of a reset for accounting, but that means we've got to dot the I's and cross the T's on everything that happened in 2018, and we've got to send out a bunch of reports that tell people about what happened in 2018, not the least of which is the HUD filing of our audit and the delivery of our 2018 year-end audit to our warehouse line lender partners. They want to see that audit. And so the accounting department is scrambling crazy to get all the stuff ready, including the W-2s and the 1099s, 1098s, getting HMDA data pulled together, getting the audit schedules ready. So they're very, very busy, and that's just how that goes. But in thinking about running the business and making decisions like servicing, retained, released. So there's a lot of detail that comes into this, and it begins with having a really solid financial platform that is used to measure the activity
yeah, so
of your business. So unless you're making money, know you're making money. Unless you've got cash flow, know you've got cash flow, have predictable cash flow, and are pretty good at managing how much you're going to make next August, what's your cash flow going to be like. You need to have an idea about those kinds of things when you start making decisions around servicing. It's an amazing business. I've been around servicing for coming up on 40 years, started in 78. It's an amazing business. I love servicing, but you got to do it right. You got to know what you're doing, and you got to make the right financial decisions around it. And it is among the most complicated issues in mortgage lending. I often say that hedging is the most complicated. Accounting for hedging transactions with a derivative asset valuation elements is complicated. But servicing is right up there, if not equal to that, in terms of the complexity, all the dynamics that go into the valuation. And the valuation model and the inputs and the cost basis. There's just tons of stuff. Cost of servicing, how all that fits together really needs to be understood comprehensively. You really need to know what you're doing to get into this. But like I say, you got to have good numbers. You got to be able to know profit per loan, profit per originator, profit per branch. You got to know your top line numbers, your cost of sales, your gross margin, all your operating expenses, and know them in a predictable fashion. That's one of the things that's so difficult about mortgage lending is the predictability or the lack of predictability. You know, to hear Joe to hear Joe talk about the economic events, well, you know, Britain's going to leave the European Union. Well, okay, what's that going to do? Or, you know, back during the crisis, Greece failed. The country of Greece failed. So, and now in the U.S. economy, we've got all of this good stuff going on, but yet the sky is falling, depending upon who you talk to, and then markets move. So I say all of that just as the preamble to servicing is an amazing business. Knowing your numbers is essential. Don't even think about doing this unless you really have a solid handle on your business. You know how much your money you're making. You can really trace your cash flows. And then it's time to think about servicing and all the amazing things that can bring and the dynamics that it brings to your business in terms of stabilizing revenue, given volatility and production. So, Dave, you and I have been in this area for many, many, many years, and it's really a fairly consistent business. It's an amazingly consistent business, and the thing that kind of messed it up is the whole fair value treatment of it. I think the presentation of the MSR on the balance sheet actually made things a little bit more complicated, because now instead of measuring to the business, we're measuring to the valuation, and I think that brings in interesting dynamics that we need to be mindful of as well. And I'm sure our special guest will touch on all of this, but I'll stop my babbling and move on so that we can hear.
Well, I think one of the things, so many people wrote me after you made the comment last week, leave accounting alone. People said, oh man, I just want to play that segment. Have you listened to the Lickin' on Lending podcast and what Andy said, leave us alone. So it was appreciated, very, very much appreciated. Good segments on here today and every week. So I would need to know about this radio podcast. You have people, you have clients that listen to you on here, get a lot of feedback. I think that's awesome, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. No, that's why we continue to do this. This is an element of freemium. I mean, I get paid for speaking. I get paid for teaching classes. Get a lot of money for teaching. And we do this for free every week because it's our way of giving back to the industry. And where else could you go and get this level of competency delivered in a capsulized format where we cover everything from conceptual topics to the reality of what's your cash flow? So, I mean, Alan's got cool stuff about what could be. Joe's always got good stuff. I mean, my stuff is, did you count it? Did you measure it? How much do you have? What are you going to have? How do you know? And then you've always got
good
your
stuff.
Amazing perspectives.
Well, it's fun doing this. We enjoy it. We've been doing it for a long, long time. We're going to continue doing it for a long, long time. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate you so much. We're going to be right back with our Hot Topic segment right after this message from Black Knight.
As housing prices climb, U.S. homeowners are holding more capital equity than ever before. Effectively capturing the equity market could pose a unique challenge for lenders who may be limited by the capabilities of their current loan origination system or consumer lending platform. Lenders looking to streamline their home equity business processes can benefit from Black Knight's LoanSphere Empower loan origination system. Using this robust and intelligent technology, Empower can originate both first mortgages and home equity loans on the same system. This single configurable solution will help lenders improve margins, support regulatory requirements, and enhance customer satisfaction. To learn more about Empower, visit blackknightinc.com today.
Excellent. Check it out, blackknightinc.com. Great company. Man, they're everywhere. Love the interviews we did last year with some of their executives and looking forward to doing some more this year. Let's get into the Hot Topic segment. Now, many of you commented during the podcast when we did the last one, when we had our guest on. Again, our guest is Seth Sprague. He is with Phoenix Capital, probably one of the premier firms. He's executive vice president, I might add, of Phoenix Capital. And we had him on December 17th, and the questions that came in to us were, quite frankly, overwhelming. And great response to his comments, and we're welcoming him back again. Seth, good to have you here, friend.
Good to be back. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, that's for sure. One of the questions I think is a great place to start today is, for a lot of people start thinking about servicing. They listen to you and they go, did we screw up for not having servicing? Should we think about servicing now and all of that? And I think probably what would be a great place to start off is to help people sort through what are the conditions or the requirements to be ready to retain servicing. So let's start there.
All right, we'll start there, and we'll see which way we go from here. But you know, it's a great question. The question we get from a lot of our clients and potential clients as to, you know, should I be retaining servicing? And my immediate answer is always, well, you should always be thinking about retaining servicing, and you should always be thinking about your servicing strategy and how it fits into your overall business lines and your business process. And so, you know, there are some capital requirements that people need to be aware of if they're going to retain servicing. For the vast majority of folks, though, in order to get their agency tickets, you know, they'll probably meet those capital requirements. But it is something to be aware of, that you do have to dedicate a certain amount of capital to servicing. And Fannie and Freddie, it's $2.5 million minimum net worth, and then, you know, 25 basis points of what they retain on the unpaid principal balance. So there are some capital requirements to be aware of. But really, I think the first question we ask folks is, you know, talk to us about your originations and talk to us about your customers and talk to us about your channels that you participate in. And why do you want to get into servicing, I think, is the first question that we get a lot of varied answers to, other than, well, I've heard it's cool, or, you know, I think it's something that could help me. Because, you know, as Andy and others on your show talk about, it's really going to come down to the cash flows. And it's really going to come down to your understanding of your business strategy long term.
And so, I mean, there's so many aspects of this thing. Andy raised some good points. And Andy, maybe it's a good time for you to come in and opine to that. When we worked together, you put it so well. You said, yeah, it's not exactly rocket scientist, but it's certainly not like flying a single engine. It's a little bit more complicated.
Well, yeah, so how much is servicing worth? And that depends. What's your cost of servicing? What are the anticipated, what's the PSA table say? I mean, there's just tons of elements that go into that. And the answer to that affects your bottom line in the quarter that you get the report. So that's why I was saying that it's from, like Seth was just saying, you need to identify this as a business strategy that you're choosing to pursue, because it overall enhances the value of your business. And then understand there may be some quarterly fluctuations that come in, but with an educated management team who understands that this volatility doesn't necessarily mean that servicing is bad or it's exceptionally good.
Right.
Or so the whipsaws of the P&L effect, I think, needs to be, I mean, Seth can correct me here, it set aside or just considered in light of a bigger holistic view of the benefits or consequences to the business strategy of contacting the customer every month, sending the customer something every month, touching events related to the customer's mortgage every single month has tremendous intrinsic value, but it's the monetization of that intrinsic value that has to be considered, and how do you do that? So, first off.
And I agree with you, and it's that customer for life concept, and as we talk strategy with folks, we try to drive them down a couple of paths here. There's a cash element to servicing. And then there's the, this sounds crazy, but then there's the financial element to servicing. And so the cash element to servicing is that if you're going to retain servicing, you are going to give up that value of the servicing that you could otherwise sell immediately, either to an aggregator or through a co-issue program. But on the cash side of the house, one of the important, and we're headed there towards tax season, one of the very important things to talk about for folks on retaining servicing is that it is a cash deferral. You know, the accounting rules are goofy. I've long since given up my CPA-ism, but I could speak to it. You know, you do not pay taxes day one when you retain servicing and keep it on your balance sheet as an MSR. That is not a taxable event. The taxes follow the cash or the actual collection of the receipts of cash, which would be the revenues less expenses. And so for a lot of non-depository institutions or IMBs, you know, this does represent sort of a tax wedge or a tax deferral that they want to take advantage of receiving income over time versus paying cash taxes on it day one when you sell it released. So there's a huge cash element to it. But Andy, to specifically to your point, you want to monitor that cash side of the equation. Do you have enough cash to actually retain servicing? Can you afford to not sell the servicing release today? But then there's, unfortunately, the other side of the accounting. If you're under fair value accounting or even low-com accounting, lower of cost or market accounting, prospectively, you can have these hiccups where you have an impairment charge or a change of the MSR value that would flow through your income statement. That, while a real P&L or income statement event, is not cash. And so this is where the MSR asset starts to, as we talk to people, David, this is where their eyes start to glaze over. And they're realizing that it sounds like we have two sets of books, but the strategy is understand the cash elements and understand the financial elements.
So, and this goes into the Basel, tomato, tomato. So we touched on it. We had a lot of questions come in, and you made some comments how there's need for changes there and clarity. Talk about that. First of all, start for some of our listeners who are not familiar with Basel, if you could get into talking about that, what that is basically is, briefly, you don't have to get too basic, but then bring us forward to what you were saying in the last podcast, how there needs to be clarity.
Yeah, great. And so I can distinctly remember when I was at SunTrust Mortgage and the Basel III rules were coming out, and I called it the Basel III bus tour around the around D Street. So about you could picture five or six people in suits, Jim Gross at the time and myself and a couple other industry folks went around to all the various agencies and we're talking about the Basel III rules impacting banks and their ability to hold servicing. So Basel III in its simplest form, in layman's terms, changes the amount of capital that a bank, and this is only affects banks, this does not affect the IMBs, banks have to hold capital against the MSR asset, and Basel III puts limits on it and or increases the amount of capital that a bank must hold to hold mortgage servicing rights. And therefore, by holding more capital or changing the capital rules, your returns are obviously impacted, and then as you sort of look at a bank balance sheet in return, you know, the return on the risk-weighted asset metric becomes impacted with Basel III. So Basel III sort of changes the amount of capital or changes the amount that a bank can hold without having to put incremental capital against the asset and therefore may make some banks less willing to hold or put a sort of restrictor plate on how much they would be willing to hold. And so those Basel rules have been out for years. I mean, that bus tour was 8 years ago. If we fast forward to where we are today, we're still wrestling with the rules. The Senate Bill 2155 did come out with some relief or potential relief for community banks. So Basel III rules are not United States rules. They are European rules, and there is no MSR asset over in Europe as these rules were. And unfortunately, there was a lot of, I'd say, misinformation that the MSR asset was the reason why we had the financial crisis and people lost money on loans. And so they limited it because it's an intangible asset. Yep. And a lot of community banks, which are very focused on their customers in their community, we're sort of overweight on MSRs under this Basel III lens. And so what we did get, and unfortunately I'm not think it's even been published in the Federal Register yet because we've been in shutdown mode, is that we did, you know, so we can't get anything done. But we did get some relief where that limit, which is under Basel III, 10%,
okay,
got increased to 25% for community banks.
From 10%?
To 25%.
Okay, from 10% to 25%. Okay, good.
5%. For community banks. So there was an acknowledgement there that they really weren't going after these community banks with the MSR asset. They were going after sort of the larger banks. And subsequent to that, we've got another proposal that's now 14 months old or over 14 months old, where we were trying to get banks that were under, and this is a technical, not advanced Basel III standards, up to 25% of Tier 1 common equity as well. And so the smaller regional banks like a SunTrust, which is not a small regional bank, but you know, is under $250 billion of total assets, could hold up to 25% of their Tier 1 common equity in MSRs, again, up from the 10%. And that rule hasn't been issued yet or hasn't even been officially proposed, but that's sort of where we're in limbo. And that's specifically what I was speaking to in terms of liquidity and making sure people understood what the capital rules were for servicing, because it'll impact the bank's willingness to participate in the MSR asset.
We just had a question come in, if you could answer it real quick for clarity. What did change and what has not changed? The 10% to 25% related to what?
Yeah, officially nothing has changed. We're in a comment period where the community banks who could qualify can hold up to 25%. So we're in a comment period for that. What has officially changed is nothing at this point. We are still, every entity that's a bank is still under that 10% limit. And not to throw in taxes, to be a little technical there, it's 10% net of the deferred tax liability associated with MSRs. So when you look at the face of the financial statements, that's not the gross number, that's a technical piece. So really nothing has changed, but we have a proposed rule out there to move it to 25%.
Okay.
And then we have another proposal for other banks.
Good, good, good. I think that brought that clarification and got a thumbs up. Thanks for asking, listener, and thanks for getting back. Let's talk about interest rate volatility. When you were on the call, when we did the December 17th interview right before the holidays, things were at one place, and man, we've seen some crazy volatility, and it has been dramatic. How has this impacted MSR market originations, MSR values? What are your thoughts? Have your thoughts changed as it relates to your forecast for 2019 and strategy from a strategy standpoint?
Yeah, we may have to go back and erase some tapes here or modify the tapes as to what the strategy was, because if we remember, rates were going to do nothing but go up this year. After the call, the Fed raised rates, short-term rates, again, another 25 basis points, and mortgage rates have done nothing but come down since that movement. Now, that's not the correlation. The correlation is that all of a sudden, the expectation is that in 2019, maybe the Fed won't raise rates again. Maybe the Fed will actually start cutting rates. I know we participated in a call last week with Mike Frattantoni of the MBA. He still is forecasting two interest rate hikes in 2019, but others are predicting zero rate hikes, and others are predicting actually a rate cut. So the volatility in rates and what's happened to mortgages since we even talked, you know, mortgage rates are back down to pre-June levels. It's really hard to figure out where mortgage rates are today, as people are cognizant of margin, and they're also cognizant of pretty much starting the year with a zero pipeline. But that has had an impact on the MSR valuations as of year end, that the expectation for prepayment speeds has increased. Now, we're not talking about like we're in a refi market per se,
right?
But Black Knight Miller suggests that, you know, if you think about your second half of originations last year, which were above 4.5%, those borrowers do have some ability to potentially refinance or think about refinancing. So there is an element there. But what's happened is that we've brought in a lot more servicing to be closer to refinance. And that is changing the expectation of the prepayment speeds, and therefore values as of year end, unfortunately, are going to be down for folks. And the kicker is, and that is a non-cash event for most folks, right? But it's a real P&L effect.
That's a real P&L then. Boy, that is it significant adjustment? If that's the case, that could have some impact on survivability for some companies.
It certainly can, David. You know, from a standpoint of values, every portfolio is going to be unique to its, you know, characteristics as to how much its value has changed. And we just got the first numbers out today from Citi. I think their portfolio lost 4 to 5 basis points of value. We will see how the other publicly traded companies sort of report earnings this week and next week and as we go through earnings season here. But, you know, values are down. And the metric to draw you to, and this is the headline risk that we face as an industry, right? You know, that the MBA, IMB subsidiary report that shows profitability, you know, if we looked at Q3 numbers, it was about 70% profitable. But if they didn't hold servicing, it was more like 50%. Well, in Q4, people are not going to get the benefit from servicing. And so do we sort of face a headline risk here of profitability in Q4 crashes in the mortgage industry, and it's really a paper loss related to servicing versus a real sort of P&L event? And, you know, headline risks, headlines today have their own ability to really move the markets.
No, that's for sure. And then also in that Black Knight data that recently came out, it talked about housing appreciation slowing, and you touched on this. Again, I want to be real specific with this question. Does that change any strategies for 2019?
Yes, to me it does. And so, you know, one of the reasons why you retain servicing, to try to loop us back into the first question here, one of the reasons why you try to retain servicing is that customer for life concept and understanding your borrower needs. And so, you know, most of the refinance activity that's sort of available today is still that sort of cash out refinance. So as a strategy, you have to be very cognizant of what is your model or what is your prediction now about housing appreciation. And how much cash out are you going to let a borrower take, given that, you know, appreciation does seem to be rolling over a little bit, and in certain markets probably rolling over a little bit more. So that would certainly impact your strategy when it came to sort of the cash out refinances. The good news for borrowers is they've got a lower rate today than they did 60 days ago. So cash out, all of a sudden you're resetting that mortgage at a lower rate, not a lower rate than you had, but a lower rate than 60 days ago. So we may see a little bit uptick in prepayment speeds here. We could certainly see credit curing if it's available on the FHA front, where, you know, you can get rid of that, you know, 85 basis points of annual MIP. And so it'll be interesting to see the dynamics of how this plays out through the prepayment speeds. And unfortunately, we may be in a scenario here around 4.5% mortgage rates where we kind of got this worst of both cases, right? You got a small write down on your MSR portfolio and no pickup on originations. That's a really dangerous spot for people.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I was hoping you were going to say, and I want people to understand that. So there's this double-edged sword when it comes to retaining servicing and how it's accounted for in your books. You know, we got a lot of questions since your podcast, and when people saw that you're coming on, we saw a lot of questions come in about the rates are falling and we're hearing MSR asset is dropping, but we're not seeing the pickup in applications. You know, walk us a little more through a little more detail in the logic of why this is. Is it because everything that's been refinanced could be refinanced? There's just no economic advantage to doing so? Walk us through that.
Yeah, so unfortunately, for us and all the other firms that sort of provide expert opinions on MSR valuations, and, you know, across our 250 clients, we've probably had 265 calls on this, which sometimes I think the clients are just calling back to have the same conversation. But when you're producing an MSR valuation, you're going to use rates as of year end. And so we're going to pull rates as of year end, as everyone else will, and we're going to set a par mortgage rate. And par mortgage rate used at year end is lower than the par mortgage rate we used as of 9/30. And so that by that one facet alone, that means that stuff is going to, from a prepayment model expectation, and this is going, you know, the future, not 12/31 actual speeds, is going to be faster. And so that's that little hiccup in value, or it could be a more than a hiccup of value, that folks are going to experience at year end, because all of a sudden the prepayment miles are going to be projecting faster speeds prospectively, even though you haven't actually seen the pickup in apps. To give you a little bit of story, because you know I like stories, remember when HARP came out and we were all of a sudden able to refinance HARP loans? Well, sitting on an MSR portfolio of loans that couldn't refinance for HARP, all of a sudden HARP allows those to refinance. So all of a sudden your expectation of future prepayment speeds has to increase. Yet you've booked no origination income yet because those loans haven't done it. Same thing sort of occurred here at year end. Unfortunately, rates fell. That expectation is speeds will be faster than they were at, you know, projected wise for the next quarter, for the next life of these loans, and therefore values have come down a little bit. There's also a little nuance here that the swap rates, that, you know, the interest rate swap rates, which we typically use for escrows, have come down as well. And that's having sort of this double impact on the MSR valuation, where you're going to get a little bit less float income and slightly higher prepayment speeds. And therefore, you're seeing sort of a double dip there on values.
Boy, you always, when you're on, we get a flood of questions. I want to focus a little more on origination side of things. What are the types of companies that benefit most from a drop in interest rates and potential increase in refinance activity?
Yeah, well, those are the ones that, and again, you know, my mantra of people that want to retain servicing is, how are you going to defend your portfolio? And how are you going to do that? Is that a, you can use a retention efforts internally, you can use a consumer direct channel. And so those are the types of companies that will fare sort of well through this cycle. They will be able to pick up any of that incremental sort of prepayment activity and be able to push that through their origination channel and book hopefully a gain on sale. So really, as we kind of go down that first question of, should I retain servicing? Should I not retain servicing? I like to think of it as a spectrum. Two spectrums to consider. One is prepayments and one is defaults. And you want to align your strategy with your ability to either service well or retain well or do both well. But it's you kind of have to pick something. So when we sort of start advising clients as to what to retain from servicing, particularly if they're going to use a subservicer, we would tell them to go a little bit heavier on prepayment risk and try to retain the customer versus default risk, where you're going to have those incremental costs of services and you have to pay advances and all that stuff. So really understanding the cash flows and where you fit on that continuum of prepayments and defaults is critically important. And then you align your origination retention efforts with your strategy on the backside.
Krug, my good buddy David Krugnally wrote this question. What about cash flow requirements regarding acquisition of servicing?
Cash flow requirements for acquiring servicing?
Yes.
I guess from an acquiring standpoint, I'm not sure if that's purchase or acquiring from your own origination channels, but
if it's from your origination. Purchasing.
Yeah, so cash flow requirements there is obviously you have to be able to pay for the servicing, but more importantly, you need to make sure that you have your operations aligned appropriately to be able to handle those transfers in and out. And you also have to understand that the advances that may have been made on servicing to the point that you're acquiring it probably need to be transferred over quickly. So there's also not the cash that you're just paying for the servicing, but then you have to settle up on the advances as well. So those cash requirements could be more than just the price, particularly when you're dealing with Ginnie Mae servicing.
Yep, that's good stuff. Andy, questions?
Well,
thoughts?
Yeah, so I'm a little bit concerned that we're teaching people how to do heart surgery on a YouTube video. So, you know, what Seth has been talking about on the default risk and how that leads to advanced risk versus repayment risk, which leads to faster prepayments and write-off of MSR, and versus the basic, which is basically FHA versus conventional. I mean, this stuff is really complicated, and it's impactful, significantly impactful on a business in terms of cash flow and P&L events. So I would just encourage people to, unless you actually understood everything he just said, you need to get somebody else to help you figure this out, including
I mean, this isn't I didn't intend this as a sales pitch for Phoenix, but you need, you know what? Don't do this on your own. Get a hold of them and figure this out completely, comprehensively, and don't assume you know it until you can say it back thoroughly and correctly, because this is a big deal.
Yeah, that's so good, Andy. That's so true. It is a big deal, and that's maybe a good way to get close to wrapping this up. But before we do, let's run over to Joe. Joe, this is a little bit, you know, this is complicated stuff. It can be, and it's so important people understand it before they get in it. You've been a servicer. You've retained servicing in your previous job. So your thoughts on as we wrap up this segment?
Question. You know, we talked earlier about this accounting consequence of the rates falling when they did and it not being a positive effect or not a negative effect on from an accounting perspective and not a positive effect from a production perspective. And that gets to the natural hedge that I spoke of a lot and we used. And there is a benefit to having to retaining servicing just because it should do well when production's not performing well. And so, Seth, I just want to get your thoughts on is there still a benefit to holding servicing as a hedge to your production operation?
Well, and I'm just going to clarify, absolutely, I think there's a benefit to retaining servicing. And I'm going to go a little bit deeper than just from your origination side. I would tell you our best clients take a look at the cash flow that's coming from the servicing asset, which is going to be the revenues less expenses. And they're figuring out how much of my fixed cost does that cover in this cycle. And they are increasingly going, I wish I had more servicing to cover more fixed cost. So, you know, the only reason why I'm correcting you a little bit is the origination side and the servicing side, the timing is way different of those P&L events. But what really does flow through the income statement from the cash flow statement is revenues less expenses covering salaries and costs. And we found increasingly a number of our stronger IMB clients that have retained servicing are really looking at that type of metric of I could cover X amount of my fixed costs with this servicing. And therefore, I know I have P&L noise potentially from a change of value. But let me look at the cash and let me understand how the cash impacts me positively or negatively. Conversely, if that cash isn't covering enough of the fixed costs, that's when you might evaluate maybe servicing isn't for you.
Good point. This is not one of those simple little discussions. I'm going to get into servicing. It's not a casual discussion. It's something that's got to be well thought out. I can't think of a better company or person to contact about the questions you have. There's many good resources out there. Andy Schell's a good resource on this stuff. I mean, we've got some expertise in our consulting firm. But Seth is, without question, probably he and the folks at Phoenix Capital are the best people to go to. So, Seth, what is the preferred way for people to reach out to you and your company?
It's probably just to find me out on LinkedIn, and we could probably post that to your site. But via LinkedIn
we'll
is always good.
Yep.
But, you know, the email address is going to be, you know, first initial last name, so sprague@phoenixtmatommaryalpha.com. Or they could just go to our website at phoenixtma and hit inquiries and find us, and I guess we could get all that posted. But, you know, LinkedIn seems to be a very popular way to find me these days.
Yeah, you know what? Half of my communication now is coming through LinkedIn. It's just like I leave it open like my email all day long, and I have someone monitoring full time. It's that powerful. Seth, thanks so much. We got questions still pouring in. Cracks me up. We appreciate you for being here. It looks like we're going to have you back again and again throughout the year as this develops, kind of like a soap opera as the stomach turns. We'll get to see new updates on it, but thanks so much. You do a great job for our industry. It's an honor to get to know you and speak with you at conferences. Appreciate you being here with us today, my friend.
Thank you very much. And for those that will be out at the IMB conference, I'll be on two different liquidity panels talking about this same topic. So hopefully people will be attending.
Well, that's outstanding. Well, folks, I am so thrilled to have you as listeners. Thanks, Seth, for joining us. Next week, I thought we were going to be having on Les Parker, but we have Pat, who's the founder and president of QFS Sales Solutions, and we'll be having her on talking about sales improvement consulting, and then we're going to get Les Parker on. That's what we're going to be doing. So anyway, good to have you with us, everyone. Special thank you to our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, the MBA, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Velma,
The Knowledge Coop, and Vidyard. Good to have you with us, everyone. Have a great week. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.